Blog Talk Radio.
This thing is off the freak book. All right. We're doing our planning, and the lady comes on, and she's like, 4, 3, 2, 1, go! I don't know if I'm going to be able to get used to this, but I'm Matt Corey. This is the Over the Monster podcast. On the other line with me is Brendan O'Toole. How's it going, Brendan?
We're buried under 10 feet of snow, but otherwise pretty good.
Okay. It's a beautiful sunny day here in Portland. It's about,
yeah, of course
about
it is.
60 degrees. Yeah.
Yep.
Actually, this is atypical. All my flowers are blooming, and this is exciting radio, I know. All my flowers are blooming, and I'm certain we're going to hit like 30 degrees for like a week at some point, and everything's going to die, but that's, you know, whatever. That's
the high in Boston for this week is going to be 20, so.
You know what my favorite app on my iPhone is? It's the weather app.
Uh-huh.
I have all of New England and Southern California and Miami on there, and every night I scroll through it. Last night in Miami Beach, 73 degrees. In Brattleboro,
uh-huh,
Vermont, it was negative 11.
Yeah. It's it is mostly cloudy and 10 right now in Somerville. So
10, huh?
10.
Double,
yeah,
digits, man. Congratulations.
Yeah, you know, it's better than last night was.
Oh, God. Well, things are, watch this. This is how a professional does it right here, Brendan. Get ready, okay? Things are heating up.
There it is.
With the Red Sox. Yes. Yeah. Yesterday, while New England was desperately trying to turn their heater on, of course, they would already have their heater on, so that's a terrible, stupid thing to say. Anyway, the Red Sox, it came out. The Red Sox didn't announce, but it came out that the Red Sox signed Yoan Moncada, who is a 19-year-old Cuban free agent, basically. They had been connected with Moncada, but they were certainly not the team that was expected to come away with him for a lot of reasons. So it is a bit of a surprise, and certainly a pleasant one, to say that Yoan Moncada is going to sign with the Red Sox, assuming he passes his physical. And if you've seen a picture of him, I don't see how he couldn't pass the physical.
Yeah.
Dude is jacked. So he's going to take a physical. Part of it is in Fort Myers, I want to say today being Tuesday, February 24th. Part of it is going to be in Boston. And I made the mistake of joking with Peter Abraham on Twitter last night about that. And the short version is, don't waste Peter Abraham's time on Twitter.
Important lesson.
That's right. It's good for everyone to know. The time is spent on Twitter is very, very important and is not to be wasted or to be silly with.
I disagree.
Hey, it's Mark Clemens of the Internet.
I'm just waiting for an opening that whole time.
Mark was eating a sandwich, but now he's
I was eating a sandwich. That's,
I know.
How did you didn't know that? I didn't tell you.
Mark, I know. I know about sandwiches. Yes. So anyway, not that this is going to be an hour of bashing Peter Abraham for yelling at me on Twitter.
Why were you wasting Pete's time?
Because I'm as someone called me on Twitter, a super jerk. I think that's what they said, a super jerk. All right, yeah. Anyway, Moncada, hooray! I did a little Moneyball fist pump kind of thing when I heard. I was it's exciting news. So let's start with who this guy is. I'll throw it at you guys. Mark, give us an overview relatively quickly of who Yoan Moncada is.
I mean, I don't think anyone knows anything for sure, which should make this pretty quick. But he projects as kind of as a five-tool guy. The people thought he would have been the first pick in this year's draft. Were he eligible? A thing to keep in mind before you get too excited about that is this year's draft class is terrible.
Right.
So that doesn't mean he wouldn't be a first pick in another draft class, but, you know, it's just because he's first doesn't mean he's automatically amazing. He's 19, and he's got a ton of room to grow, and players with his potential just don't come to the Red Sox very often. And that's really kind of the big thing here. Even if he doesn't become everything he's expected to be, and no one even knows what position he's going to play yet because he is pretty much capable of anything except for shortstop and catcher. It's someone that the Sox really had to go get just because, you know, unless they are the absolute worst team in the league some year, you know, they're just not getting that pick.
Right, right. We can talk about the financials in a second. I think I have a handle on those. But Brendan, what about Moncada is especially exciting? Why is this a big deal?
Well, I mean, like Mark said, he's a young kid that has, from many accounts, just a full five-tool player. He is a guy that they wouldn't get in like anywhere near where the Red Sox normally draft. I mean, even, you know, they've had two completely shit years out of the last three, and they drafted seventh. So
right.
they're still not getting top five guys. So there's that, you know, and he's 19. He's never played a day of pro ball outside of Cuba. So the comps are silly at this point. But, you know, the one that stood out for me yesterday was somebody was like, basically they got Robinson Cano with more speed and more versatility.
Right.
And then I blacked out.
My favorite part about that is that scouts thought Robinson Cano was going to be garbage.
Yeah. Yeah. That's right. Right.
It's like, so what are you seeing in Moncada? That's
yeah.
I wrote a piece at BP years ago about what all the people were saying about Cano when he came up, and that was particularly funny.
Oh yeah, it was like he doesn't pay attention defensively. He's a hacker. He's not gonna
Power might not play. He's too right. slow. He doesn't care. Yeah, right. All that sort of stuff. But so that's the exciting thing is that this is a guy who could be because he's 19 and he's not played and we don't know, but he has superstar potential, and so that, you know, that's a guy the Red Sox don't normally get their hands on unless it's internationally, for the reasons you guys said. The thing to me that I think is the most interesting about Moncada is the power potential and the ability to play defensively, you know, up the middle, center field potentially, second base seems like a reasonable place to put him, maybe third base. The one position that I find the most intriguing, I think, is right field. That's a place that the Red Sox may have some space, you know, in the organization going forward. And he's got the arm for it. He supposedly has a terrific arm. A 70 on the scouting scale is what Ben Badler put it at. He's a 60 runner. That may slow down as he gets older. And Badler also put his power at a 60 right now. And that may improve as time goes on. There's the potential to improve, I guess, is the point. He could be terrible. It could be a giant waste of money. but this is actually an important point, is that this is – well, I'll phrase this in a question, Mark. What – at least from you know, the Red Sox on the field organizational point of view, what was this money going to be spent on if not Yoan Moncada?
Nothing.
Exactly.
You know, it's all lump sum payments, basically. You know, his actual contract, since it's a minor league deal, is going to be, you know, 3 years of team control, pre-arb, and then his arbitration years.
So it's all bonus is the important thing, right?
Yeah, it's all bonus. So it's not like they were going to write a $60 million check to a player.
Yeah, they didn't sign him to a contract. He's not, I mean, he's not...
It's not a major league deal. It's not like Jose Iglesias' deal.
Right.
Where, you know, that he's on the 40-man roster now. It's nothing like that.
Right.
He has to work his way up through the minors, and he just got a huge record-setting bonus to do it. So it's a little weird situation where, you know, you're not going to be able to spend that money on any player. They weren't going to get a year of James Shields by handing him $60 million. I mean, maybe they would have, but you know, the offer was never going to be made. That sort of thing. You're never gonna say a guy is worth $60 million for a year. So,
right.
You know, the qualifying offer is like $15 million. Like that, you're just going to ruin the whole system if you do something like that. So this is the only way to do that, where you're just like, hey, we have a ton of money, and John Henry doesn't mind spending it, but we don't want to commit.
Right.
So, you know, it's kind of like the Dice K thing, which I know someone just recoiled hearing that, but that was, you know, $50 million that didn't really have anything else they were going to put it on that winter. So who cares? You know, if they're not going to miss it, then, you know, it's just money spent.
Right. It, at least in terms of the team, you know, they weren't going to go out and spend it on a free agent. They weren't going to go out and use it to extend a player currently under team control. They're not going to, you know, they weren't going to be able to spend it in the draft or anything like that.
Yeah.
And to be clear, half of the money is Moncada's. The $31.5 million is the number I've heard. That is going to Yoan Moncada. The other half, which will also be $31.5 million, is going to Major League Baseball's We Demand an International Draft Right Now slush fund, apparently. But the key thing here is that the Red Sox got somebody that they weren't going to get for money that they weren't going to spend elsewhere. This is like,
and they did it in an arena where they had already subjected themselves to the penalties of international spending.
Yeah, exactly.
So all the, you know, that whole, they already were going to have to pay a tax. It was only going to be for like $2 million, you know, I mean, not even $2 million originally, and now it's, you know, it's ballooned slightly.
Slightly, a little.
But they were still going to be restricted to signing players for a $300,000 bonus max the next two signing periods. So that's until July 2nd of 2017. So Moncada's kind of just them going, well, you know, they didn't have any major deals in place for this July 2nd that they had to, you know, back out on.
Right.
Because they can't make a major deal this July 2nd. So Moncada was it. It was just, hey, if we already screwed up, let's go huge. I mean, not screwed up, but, you know, they already went past that threshold.
Right.
Go big. Which is probably why Yankees fans are so angry, because the Yankees were the ones who looked like they were just completely leaving the budget behind.
Right.
And then with possibly the most important player from the entire group, you know, they didn't bid enough. They stopped short.
Yeah, the Yankees, well, the Red Sox got two pitchers in the international signing period that put them over, I believe. It was Acosta and Espinoza.
Those two by themselves
right,
blew way past the budget, because they only had $1.8 million, and I think one of them alone was $1.2 or $1.3.
Yeah, so those are two. One of them's from Venezuela, and I forget, the other one is Dominican, maybe? I'm not certain. But in any case, they're both, I think, 16. Maybe one might be 17. They're very young. But signing those two guys put the Red Sox over the international bonus pool allotment already. So they were, like Mark said, they were already subject to it. They were to the penalty. This doesn't increase the penalty. It's not like now they can't sign somebody, you know, for $300,000 for anything over $300,000 for the next 30 years. It's still 2 years. It's exactly the same penalty. So, but the Yankees, for just some context, the Yankees spent $17 million. On the international international kids this past period. So, that's a number I just heard from Ben Badler on the SoxProspects.com podcast. So I don't recall specifically if that includes bonus includes the penalties.
No, it doesn't. That is, they just straight up signed like 30 dudes on July 2nd.
Okay, so there you go. So they were the Yankees were also going to have to pay this penalty, and they're going to be in, you know, prospect jail for the next 2 years also. And so, yeah, that's why Yankees Twitter was a lot of fun yesterday. but the Yankees also, I mean, you know, you can look at, you know, the Red Sox system, where it places, you know, in the rank of organizations, and it's, you know, number five, roughly, somewhere in there. And the Yankee system is nowhere near that, although with the guys they added, it's certainly better than it was. So
just a long way away.
Right. But they're, you know, they had much more of a need, I guess you could argue, for Moncada than the Red Sox did. And I don't know about you guys, I certainly expected him to go to New York. Or I didn't really ever buy the Dodgers as a serious suitor, just because the Dodgers hadn't already blown through it. So it didn't make sense for them to go half-assed, you know, to stay under the bonus pool rules, and then just for this one guy blow through it when they could just do what the Yankees did this past year.
There was more to it than just that. There's also an 18-year-old pitcher that who's the same thing. Like, if they spend on him, they'll blow the bonus pool.
Yeah.
So if the Dodgers went for Moncada, they were going to sign like three guys, and they were just going to go insane.
Oh, okay.
So it wasn't just going to be him. They were going to go all out. So their decision was, do we want to go crazy now, or do we want to be able to do this
next year,
next July, when the Yankees can't do it, the Red Sox can't do it,
right,
the Angels, the Rays, all these teams can't
sign
anyone, you know, and they'll be able to take literally every prospect they want to.
Well, it's interesting because the, you know, we're talking about $17 million like it's the, you know, the end of the world. $17 million for a major league franchise is not all that much. I mean, obviously, there, you know, things are budgeted in different ways, and, you know, there's major league budget, and there's, you know, minor leagues and draft budgets and international budgets and all this sort of stuff. And I'm not privy to how teams break it all down, but on the whole, $17 million seems like a pretty reasonable sum to take your farm system from crap to pretty good, especially when you're talking about, you know, what that will allow you to do at the major league level, you know, both immediately and in the future. But
it doesn't do anything for you immediately. You know, these are all 16-year-old kids. Moncada's kind of the exception, sort of thing. You know, it's very rare that you get these sorts of guys who are 18, 19. Usually they're already in a situation where they're old enough that they're not part of the international budget spending.
Yeah.
Or they're so young that they're only going to get $1 million, you know, tops anyway.
Okay. Okay, so let's talk about, well, I don't know if we discussed exactly, well, I guess we sort of did, what Moncada is good at. I mean, it, you know, it sort of remains to be seen also. He's 19, but he's going to start in Greenville? Is that what they're saying?
I would think Salem.
Salem, okay.
But, I think of how aggressive they were with Iglesias, who couldn't hit
right
at all. I mean, he had the glove. His glove was major league ready when he showed up to, you know, to camp. But I would think Salem until it's warm, and then probably Portland.
Oh, really? You think they'll move him up to Double A that fast?
Yeah, I mean, I think they'd start him there if it wasn't going to be 40 degrees on opening day.
Wow. Yeah, that's a pretty, it sounds to me like an aggressive start. I mean, I know, I forget who said it, but there was a report that some major league team thought that Moncada was major league ready. Now, that's only one, team that I've heard say that, but still, I assume that they would keep him in, you know, in single A, especially since there's really, you know, there's certainly no place for him at the major league level right now, and there's, you know, there's no need to rush him.
Well, part of the beauty of Portland is that they have no position prospects right now whatsoever. So
is Lars Anderson still there?
Is what?
Lars Anderson still there?
You're years behind.
Jason Place is playing in right field.
Henry Ramos is playing in right field. He's actually, like, the most interesting guy that they have there, which should tell you something. You know, Ramos might be interesting, but he's so much more – he's just tools and not really performance yet. So, you know, Moncada could play in a different spot in the lineup every day if they wanted him to, on the field every day.
Mm-hmm.
And he wouldn't be getting in anybody's way in Portland. So I think they'd probably try and get him up there as soon as they feel like he's ready, just because he can kind of go wherever.
Okay. So as far as the Red Sox system as a whole, Brendan, it's obviously super early, but where do you feel like, you know, from what you know about it, where do you feel like Moncada slots?
I mean, from what I've read so far, the consensus seems to be that if he's basically at worst the second best prospect they have right now, and on pure upside, he might be above Swihart, just because he has the potential to be like a five-tool guy up the middle, and that's incredibly, incredibly valuable. But yeah, I mean, since we haven't seen him play in professional American baseball yet, I would feel uncomfortable putting him above Swihart just because of how good Swihart looks like he's going to be.
Right, right.
But yeah, certainly, you know, he's absolutely made, you know, the top end of the Red Sox farm system that much better. And since, I mean, like, officially Bogarts and Betts are no longer prospects, but they're still short enough on Major League service that it's like they're still part of that, like, new young guys group.
Right.
It seems like Moncada certainly fits in with that group. And to have, you know, one more guy at that level is just absolutely great for the Red Sox going forward, because young and cheap and talented is, you know, the magic that everyone keeps looking for.
Well, maybe back up on the cheap a little bit. But,
well, yeah.
But I know what you mean. you know,
hey, he'll be paid for before he ever gets to the majors. So
that's very likely.
The only money the Red Sox actually care about is what counts against the luxury tax. So,
mm-hmm.
Right, and this doesn't do anything. So,
right. It's interesting to look at the top of the, you know, the Red Sox prospect list. I mean, you can quickly see that there's a bunch of guys in Pawtucket, like Mark was talking about. You know, and then there's some younger guys who, you know, are still probably more projection than anything else. You know, a guy like Devers, a guy like, you know, Margot, a guy like Michael Chavis, who was last year's first round pick. And then you've got guys who are, you know, right on the doorstep, and we have a pretty good idea of who they are, what they can do. A guy like Swihart, a guy like Owens. Eduardo Rodriguez, we'll probably learn a whole lot more about him this year. Brian Johnson, Matt Barnes, Garen Cecchini, et cetera. And yeah, that, you know, Moncada it kind of straddles those two groups. He's kind of right in the middle there, like you were saying, Mark. So it'll be interesting to, you know, to see. I mean, that's where he is now, I guess. But, you know, if he moves as quickly as some people think, then, you know, maybe he even jumps into the group in AAA. I mean, how far do you think, if he hits well in Portland, is there a chance that he gets into AAA this year?
I think they keep him in Portland unless there have been a lot of injuries or trades.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Coyle might not even have a space in Pawtucket.
Don't you
right away.
Him like that.
He might not. You know, they're gonna have Cecchini at third. If they decide they want Jameel Weeks at second base as depth and they want to keep him going every day,
mm-hmm.
then Coyle's gonna go back to Portland, where he still hasn't played a full season because of injury. So it's not a terrible stretch to keep him there.
But he is,
and he's very young too. So
he's also hit what 700 home runs there,
roughly. But he's only done it in about 10 games.
Yeah. That's pretty good, though, 700 home runs in 10 games.
Yeah, it's great, but, you know, you can't rely on him for anything.
No.
When are those 10 games going to come?
Every fourth swing, something breaks his body.
But, yeah, you know, Marrero's at short.
We always wanted Jed Lowry back.
Marrero's at short. The outfield is full. You know, they already traded Milbrooks in part because there was nowhere to play him there. So I think unless a lot of people have moved up or been traded, you know, Portland's probably as high as he goes this year, you know, unless he hits 400 there for 3 months, which I don't see him doing. I just don't want to say never or anything like that.
Right. So let's address a couple things. One is now that they have Yoan Moncada, they can trade Mookie Betts and Blake Swihart and I don't know, whoever else you want to say, and they can get Cole Hamels and Johnny Cueto and Jordan Zimmerman and all these guys.
I don't understand how that was the first reaction that so many people had, where they're like, now they can trade these guys that they don't want to trade. Like, okay, why? Moncada's not coming up for 2 years, right. Probably. What do you got some games to play before that?
Yeah, and they've spent some money on the roster this year. Maybe mm-hmm. maybe you've noticed. I mean, I don't know. I know you guys don't pay a lot of attention to the Red Sox, but I heard that they made some free agent signings. Yeah, it's an interesting thought process. But it's, I mean, I can understand it to a certain extent, you know, like you want to, the idea being, I guess, that you want to have X amount of talent in the minor league system. And once you blow past that, you're like, okay, we have excess talent in the minor league system. We can spend some of this capital. Of course, it doesn't really work like that. You know, each player is an individual specific case, and you know the value is determined by you know how important they are to the organization, how important you know how valuable they are to other teams, it's a little more complicated than just a giant vat of fudge and oh it's overflowing I guess we better eat the fudge.
Yeah, I wrote about before the Sox signed Moncada. A few weeks back, I wrote about where would he fit in the organization, because that was one of those questions. It was like, well, he's blocked everywhere. It's like, well, first of all, he's a prospect. He's 19. He's not blocked. Don't say that.
There's 7 positions on the field that he can play.
But, you know, there's so many moving pieces that are going to happen as the Sox reshape their core over the next couple of years. I know you guys, I hope you're sitting down. Are you ready?
No, don't say it.
I have to.
If this involves...
David Ortiz might retire... in the next few years.
And he's going to take a job at the Cubs, right?
So, like everybody else does.
Ugh.
So, you know, Ortiz might retire, which will be, you know, they're not going to be able to replace him directly, obviously. But, you know, there are a number of options they already kind of have on hand to do that. If they keep re-signing Mike Napoli... you know, Napoli could shift over to DH there if they're concerned. If they think moving him to DH will keep his hip in even better shape, keep him hitting.
Mm-hmm.
They could move Hanley Ramirez there, opening up a spot in the outfield, which allows him to kind of shift everyone left and make room in the outfield for Moncada. You know, Xander Bogaerts might never field well at shortstop, but he starts to hit like you expected him to. Maybe he's your first baseman.
Yeah.
Which, you know, opens up maybe not shortstop, but it starts this whole kind of trend of everyone moving around, and maybe a space opens for Moncada that way. Or, you know, David Ortiz never retires, Mike Napoli keeps hitting, Hanley's perfect and left, and then who cares if there's no room for Moncada in 2 years, because everything is perfect.
I think that sounds reasonable. I'm going to go with your
last... Yeah, I mean, we should do that. We should just convert...
your last...
We'll make Swihart into a pitcher again, so he can help there, and I don't know, Moncada can catch or something.
Done.
Why not?
That makes sense.
Someone's going to be half listening and take that seriously and either think it's the greatest idea ever or that I'm a gigantic idiot.
At Mark_Normandin for all of you people who want to yell at Mark for suggesting we move Yoan Moncada to catcher.
I am very liberal with the mute button, just so you guys know.
And I don't know how to use the mute button, so if you yell at me, then I'll pass it on to Mark. I won't see it.
I've already muted Matt.
Oh. I was just going to go ahead and say my Twitter handle is @unexpectedbase.
Yep.
Anyway, so we are of the collective opinion, is it fair to say, gentlemen, that signing Yoan Moncada does not mean that Cole Hamels is walking through that door unless something changes, and that would have been something changes, you know, on the Phillies' end to change what they're looking for. And, you know, in a sense, if I can attempt to boil this down, signing Yoan Moncada has no impact whatsoever on the Red Sox acquiring a starting pitcher. Correct? Brendan?
I mean, no impact might be much, but minimal. Yeah, I mean, like, for Hamels, I would say no impact, because the Phillies seem to be very dead set on, you know, it will be a package built around either Swihart or Betts, and the Red Sox are just saying, no, neither of those guys is leaving.
Right.
For one of the other guys, you know, Moncada does give the Red Sox one more big top-tier prospect, makes their minor league system that much deeper, and allows them to deal from depth. Like, it gives them a little bit of an option to look at one of, like, the sort of not fringier prospects, but the not quite top tier.
Yeah.
And be a little more willing to give them up for, say, like a year of Johnny Cueto or Jordan Zimmermann. But even then, it's, you know, since Moncada is not going to be traded, obviously, and Swihart and Betts weren't going anywhere.
Yeah.
Right. And since those other two top guys weren't going anywhere, you know, it doesn't change that much. Because either, like, if they were willing to give up some of their, you know, top-tier or just under-top-tier prospects for a starting pitcher, they're going to do that whether they have, you know, an awesome new 19-year-old or not.
Right. Right. Mark?
Yeah, I mean, it's more just a reminder that Cicchini and Bradley and Marrero probably aren't long for the organization. Or... Mm-hmm. That, you know, one or two of them were on the way out. But we knew that already, you know, even without Moncada around. If you're not giving up Betts and Swihart and you're having conversations about trades, well, you know, it kind of leads to the idea that, well, these guys are the ones who are going to get moved.
Yeah, it's true. I feel like Bradley's such a lost opportunity. Like, I don't know what the case, you know, what the problem was last year. But I still think he can be a good, you know, league average hitter with great defense. I think that's completely attainable for him. And I am upset that it's not going to happen in the Red Sox organization. But you know, I guess that them's the breaks. You know.
Hey, you know, he could turn it around. He could turn it around this year and either get traded or, you know, and bring back a nice return.
Yeah.
Or they could sit on him in AAA all season long and Victorino will be gone. And again, we don't like to talk about this stuff sort of thing, but, you know, if Ortiz's wrist, for instance, is awful and then Hanley's the DH next year, you know, you never know what's going to happen. Which is why I think the Red Sox would probably rather hold on to Bradley a year too long. You know, they have so many assets that they can afford to do that. It's the same reason they didn't force Middlebrooks out of Boston until, you know, they had Pablo Sandoval.
Yeah.
It's maybe not worth it to just push the guy out because you don't know. You know, holes could open up all over the place. Maybe Rusney Castillo, it turns out, isn't a guy who's going to hold up over 150 games because he's never even had to hold up over 100 games before.
Right. Yeah, you never know. That's the overriding factor. You just don't know what the future will bring. I have a hard time believing that, you know, the Red Sox will pay Hanley Ramirez $20 million, $22 million, whatever the number is, to DH. That seems unlikely to me. I mean, you know, you go with the hand you're dealt. So if he's got injuries or that, you know, for whatever reason, that seems to be the right move at the time, then I guess you do that. But given the information we have right now, you know, he's a young-ish player, 31, I think. It just doesn't make sense to move a guy like that to DH. A guy like Napoli, I could see with the, you know, with the hip issues. I don't know. And another thing you hear is oh, well, just move Sandoval there. Well, Sandoval is a fine defensive player, and on top of that, you know, he's a fine hitter for third base, but he's really not an amazing hitter.
Brandon, did you hear that? He just complimented Sandoval's defense.
I did.
I was waiting for joke to follow.
We'll hold
after.
To that one.
Yeah.
Now
it's on the record.
Was I contractually supposed to make a fat joke after bringing up Sandoval? I'm sorry.
No. Oh, God, that whole...
He has great hands, and if his hands miss the ball, then the ball just bounces right off his tummy. And that's it's easy to pick it up, throw it there. Was that better?
Well, no, I was just talking about how you refused to admit he was... good defensively for a while. But it's okay. You've done your homework. You've listened to your intelligent, handsome friends. And now you're right. It's fine.
That's right. Yeah. I don't think I ever said he was a bad defensive player. Did I?
All right.
I don't know. Okay. Well, he's a terrible defensive player. And he's a pizza.
There we go.
That's all right. He is. He's just a large pizza over there at third base.
But yeah, I'm with you with the let's move him to first base. It's kind of the, like... I mean, he's a better hitter than Middlebrooks was, but it's the same thing over again. It's like, realize he's valuable at he could be valuable at third, partially because of his defense, right?
Yeah, if he's a first baseman DH, he's not worth $90 million.
I mean, if he's a first baseman and everything else, you know, if he's a first baseman because you have a hole and you're able to put Moncada at third,
right,
and everything else, in the, you know, it's which is what I was going to say about Hanley at DH. Like, yeah, maybe it seems like a lot to pay him, but if that's the way to keep Hanley and also have all of these other guys,
right?
Okay, whatever. Who cares?
Right. So that's you know? That's why I said you take the situation as it is at the time. But right now, it seems like a bad use of resources. But you know, you cross that bridge when you get to it. Mm-hmm. So I guess that's Moncada. You know, it'll be super interesting to follow him up through the system over the next couple of years, and you know, see where he slots in defensively. And I think that's more or less what I have to say about him. Have I missed anything, guys?
I think you forgot to mention that he's going to cure cancer.
Oh, I did forget to mention that.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, that was really. Shirking your duties there.
I'm not a very good host.
Oh, well. Bringing down the podcast now.
That got dark.
Yeah. Jeez. That's okay. Moncada's going to host.
He's going to host the OTM podcast.
starting next year. He's taken over. I forgot to tell you.
Did you, you signed him to a record bonus of $31.50?
Well, you signed him. To it. So, by the way, you need to send him a check. I hope that's okay.
That means that over the course of 121 episodes, the Over the Monster podcast has cost me $31.50.
That's pretty good.
Yeah. It could have cost me a lot more, I guess.
What kind of surplus value is that?
Yeah, not much. But that's the life of an internet podcaster. Well, let's. We have a little bit of time left. What spring issues are on your mind? Are you guys? This is an interesting question. Are you interested in discussing the outfield? Because I found it surprising that John Farrell was so eager to appoint Shane Victorino to be the starting right fielder. But then, upon thinking about it for 20 seconds. I realized that, oh, of course. Why wouldn't he say that?
That's more thought than most people gave it, to be honest.
Maybe I'm giving it too much time. Maybe it was more like 8 seconds. But, I mean, did it surprise you to hear him say that? Either of you, Brendan?
No, I mean, Farrell, for all of his strengths and weaknesses, his biggest thing is he is, in dealing with his players, a pretty old-school manager. Mm-hmm. Victorino's the veteran. He was signed to play right field 3 years ago, and he's going to be the starter unless something weird happens.
Yeah.
Farrell does seem to be a believer in, you know, you're not going to lose a job to injury. You're the guy who's going to start. Not to mention that Victorino seems like a guy who will be motivated by knowing that the underlying message of that is, it's yours if you're healthy.
Right. Right.
Which, I mean, and there's only so much, you know, the whole, like, health is a skill thing is sort of a weird phrasing, but there's definitely, like, yeah, no, go get it, because it's going to be yours, the spot is open for you, and clearly you have competition. And the other thing is, you know, the other guys they have available, like, Castillo is certainly going to start in center, just because he's signed to a major league deal and they need to do that, but, you know, everybody else is guys they could put back in AAA or on the bench, and it wouldn't really be that much of a change.
Well,
Victorino's the guy that they want to get him starting.
Isn't it true that Farrell was also the guy who was talking about Mookie Betts as the leadoff hitter?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's... Managers can say multiple things.
That's true.
And often do. I mean, that's the thing. It's like once spring training gets going... Well, the other thing is I can imagine looking at that as... when they asked about, like, who's going to be batting leadoff, and he mentioned Mookie Betts, there was still a lot of, like, the Red Sox are probably going to trade Victorino talk. Now everybody's
also
training, and Victorino's in camp.
He was coming off back surgery, too. I mean, he's still coming off back surgery.
Right, yeah. So,
he was undergoing back surgery or whatever.
Yeah, so he wasn't, you know, potentially a healthy part of the team. And now he's showed up at spring training, and he looks like he's healthy. And so if he's healthy, he is, you know, a proven and a trademarked proven veteran.
Yeah.
And he's really good at baseball when he's healthy. So yeah, he would be. So yeah, it makes sense to have him be. You know, he will be the starting right fielder because he's been there before. He was signed to do it. He's getting paid the most to do it, so you might as well get that out of him.
Mm-hmm.
And worst case, he gets hurt 20 games in, and you put Betts in like you were probably secretly planning to anyway.
Right.
And best case, he's awesome again.
Yeah.
And then you have, you know, Shane Victorino being awesome, and maybe he's just awesome all year for the Red Sox. Maybe he's awesome until July. They trade him, and they put Mookie Betts in. So.
Yeah.
So yeah, I don't think there's anything to lose by saying Victorino's the starter because, you know, Betts is, he seems to be, you know, somebody with a good head on his shoulders who understands, yeah, I'm 22. I know I'm not expected to be the starter automatically.
Yeah.
And it may even be good to not throw him at the starter immediately. So.
No, those are good points. I think you're dead on. I'd be surprised if the Red Sox are doing well and Victorino's healthy and playing well and they traded him. That was the one thing that I would disagree with. I would expect that if Victorino is healthy and playing well, those two caveats are met, then you know, he'll be the starting right fielder going forward. And, you know, as he probably should be, you know, for the betterment of the team. You know, projections aside, you know, Betts is a 22-year-old guy, whatever age he is, 22, I think, like you said. So, sure, Steamer projects him to be worth 4.5 wins or whatever it is, but he's 22 and he's played a quarter of a season. So I think you take that with a grain of salt. Is that correct, Mark Normandin of the internets?
I mean, the thing everyone seems to kind of forget is that Shane Victorino is the best outfielder in the Red Sox, and that he was their best player in 2013, and that if his back wasn't failing him last year, he probably would have been really good last year, too.
Yeah.
So, yeah, if he's healthy, he should be playing. And also, starting doesn't mean he's going to play 6 games a week. You know, because they have all this depth now, there's a chance he plays 3-4 games a week, and he's the primary guy. But they go out of their way to make sure that they don't aggravate his back, that they don't mess with the leg injuries that he's had, that he's played through previously. You know, they might try and get the best, most efficient 450 plate appearances they can out of Victorino. And you have Betts take over for those other days. You have Betts play in center. When you're trying to work Castillo's workload up. He hasn't played a full season in a couple of years, and a full season is 90 games in Serie Nacional. And you've got Hanley Ramirez in left, who could play anywhere from 80 to, you know, 140 games.
Mm-hmm.
So Betts is going to play. You know, if you reverse Betts and Victorino's roles, and he said, "Oh, Betts is the starter, Victorino's the fourth outfielder," everyone would say it's a brilliant move because he has all this upside and potential. So long as everything is right, he can play all three outfield spots. He's great depth. You know, like, okay, why can't Betts do that? You know.
Seemingly he can. Yeah, no. So you think, and I agree with you if this is what you think, that Betts is on the roster and breaks camp at the big league club, you know, whether he's the quote-unquote starter or not. They're not going to send him down to AAA to play every day with the number of questions that they have in the major league outfield, Hanley being healthy, Castillo being who knows, Victorino being healthy. Is that about right?
The only way I see them not keeping Betts up is if they need a little more time to trade Alan Craig.
That was the question.
So, and even that is justified because you've got Nava, who's still inexpensive. You got Craig, who can be a serious asset if he's healthy.
Right.
And you need time to find that out, just like you need time to find out if Victorino is, you know, what he wants. And you know, maybe they push some of Mookie Betts' service time off a little bit, and
yeah,
I don't know. It's not the end of the world. In the same way, it wasn't the end of the world if Jackie Bradley started 2013 with the Sox. It's not the end of the world if Betts doesn't.
Yeah,
because there will be a space for him soon enough, and if he's not there, he's not there for a good reason. It has nothing to do with him. It's just because you've got all these other assets.
Right.
Having too many good players is not a problem.
It's almost as if they have Craig at just the wrong time. Like, if they had him next year, I think that would be ideal. I mean, even as a, you know, as this sort of, like you're talking about, you know, part-time player who bounces around from first base to DH to right field, or I'm sorry, left field, that would be an ideal fit. But with the other players on the roster, he's just totally superfluous. There's there's just no reason to have him. I'm curious less what they can get for him and more if they're going to have to eat any of the money in his contract.
I don't think they'll have to. It's really not that much money. You know, there's an option. No, I think there's only two guaranteed years left, and first baseman and power are so rare right now that if he hits in the spring, people are asking for him. You know, he was a hot commodity over the winter.
They're asking about him, but that doesn't mean that they were willing to take his contract. I'm not saying his contract is you know, wholly onerous, but you know, just because people are asking about him doesn't mean that they're willing to to assume that the contract. I mean,
if he looks good, the Sox aren't going to have to eat any money.
Yeah, no, that's probably true. I mean,
that's a guy who raked all the way through St. Louis until he had a foot injury. So if he looks fine, pretty much anyone in the league is going to happily take that.
Just to be clear, from 2011 to 2013, he hit .312 with a .364 on base percentage and slugged exactly .500. That's 36% above average OPS. And then in 2014, that was not good. Clear selection. Thank you. In 2014, he hit .215, which is 100 points below, .279, which is 100 points below, and slugged .315, which is 140 points below. And that's an OPS plus 34% below average. In Boston, he was – it's 94 plate appearances – or 107 plate appearances, but holy God, he was atrocious. I don't know. I think it's possible that they could deal him in spring training if he's healthy and hitting. I don't know. It just – I feel like he's an asset, and the Red Sox, the timing has just been terrible. You know?
Well, you know, when they traded for him – they didn't have Castillo.
Exactly, right.
You know, Cespedes was...
And then they, you know, I think actually Ramirez fell into their lap, and it just sort of made him unnecessary in a lot of levels. I think next year he would be really useful, but oh well.
They can all, you know, they can stash him too. Not in the minors, but, you know, they can make him Mike Karp. He'll just cost more. And it'll come at the expense of bats, but if everyone's doing fine at the major league level, you know, there's just a whole lot of questions to be answered. So it's really tough to take any hard stance on any of this because it's like, I don't know, they have a million options and they all sound pretty good. So
yeah,
let's go down the list. Let's see if this one work. Great, awesome. Now we don't have to worry about the rest of it.
That's true. All right, Brendan, is there any particular storyline in spring training that is piquing your interest, or because it seems like things are, other than the outfield situation and you know the bench, like we're talking about, there doesn't seem to be a whole lot of stuff up in the air.
No, I mean the question is, yeah, what do they do with like the surplus outfield and the bench? And we've covered that pretty well. There's, you know, still there will be speculation about getting the fabled ace until probably 2018. And, you know, if Ruben Amaro finally faces basic reality, the Red Sox might get Cole Hamels. They might, you know, they'll kick the tires on a few other guys. They'll always keep an ear open for that because if they could get Jordan Zimmermann into this rotation, why wouldn't they?
Yeah.
But yeah, for the most part, the team's pretty well set. You know, most importantly, all over Twitter today has been David Ortiz taking selfies with Hanley and Panda, and referring to the three of them as the good, the bad, and the ugly. So, spring training looks great, honestly.
I'm gonna miss him so much. I'm already like in pre-missing.
Yeah, but the thing is that David Ortiz will never leave the Red Sox. Like, he will basically retire and then instantly be signed as, like, the Pedro Martinez, Jason Veritek advisor to whatever we need him to do.
Yeah.
Happiness
advisor. Yeah.
Yeah, right.
He's going to help people pick up.
Yeah, they'll just have a smile for every game.
Executive in charge of selfies. All right.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I'm with you. You know, the other thing I guess to talk about is the very back end of the bullpen. But who's a fuck? You know, that they're gonna rotate guys in and out of there, and people are gonna get hurt, and they'll bring in new people, and you know, the guys they have at the front end are the front end being Uehara and Tozawa and Mojica.
That's the back end.
Yeah, that's the line. Those are the best pitchers that they have in the bullpen, however you want to phrase it.
Stop trying to change established terms, okay?
The established back terms end. Is done. Anyway, whether Vivaro is great or Breslow is terrible, I mean, we'll get through all of that. I guess we should call it a day, gentlemen. What do you say? All right, that sounded like a resounding yes. you listeners, thank you for putting up with this. This being the 121st Over the Monster podcast, Yon Mankata edition. You can follow Mark Normandin of the internets on the Twitter @Mark_Normandin. You can follow Brendan @UnexpectedBase. You should follow both of them. You can follow me @MattyMatty2000. There's no reason to do that. You can rate and review us on iTunes. That's what people say at the end of these podcasts. You can rate and review us on iTunes. I guess it's a nice thing if you do it. You know, whatever. So that'll do it for us here. And I'm sure we'll have another podcast at some point during spring training. Something will pop up. And then we'll be here to cover it. So until then, enjoy spring training. Enjoy David Ortiz. Enjoy the what was it? The good, the bad, and the ugly.
The good, the bad, and the ugly. Yeah.
And we'll talk to you all soon. I'm going to hit the end episode button now, and sometimes that doesn't work. So let's see. Bye. Yes, end the episode.